ones they're looking at. Are they coming in from the side, or are they coming in from the top? They don't want anything to do with the ones that are coming in from the side. They'd never be able to figure out, you know, anything about them. And plus, they want to know the direction that the ones that they're detecting, where they're coming from. So what they have is these telescopes, these eight little telescopes. They're star trackers, and they're looking up at the sky, and they can tell what constellations they're looking at, and they know which way is up and which way is down. They know which way where they're facing at the time. So now they, you know, the ones that are coming in from the side, that would throw everything off. So they have detectors on the side that say, oh, okay, here's a particle that's coming in, you know, at a 90-degree angle. We don't want to know anything about that. It actually shuts the unit off. It detects it, and it says, I'm not going to detect that piece. It's only interested in the ones that are coming down, you know, straight down. So it kind of is like a telescope. It knows the direction of the particles that it wants to evaluate. And that information all goes down to the physicists. There's some 600 physicists that were involved with this, or scientists that were involved with this whole project that still are, that need that information. So for a little over $2 billion, that's what we have attached to the International Space Station. Any questions about the AMS, the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer? Okay, no comments. No comments, no questions. That will be Monday anyway. Then on Wednesday we have the CRS Dragon launch going up to the International Space Station. That'll be the 19th flight by a Falcon 9 bringing up a Dragon vehicle to the space station. And they'll stay for actually until around January. They'll dock, they'll unload all the stuff in the pressurized area and the unpressurized area. They'll fill it up with scientific equipment, things that need to go back to the scientists. I don't know if there's any mice that have to go back, but there's 40 mice, live mice, going up on the space station. They have facilities inside that cargo vehicle that maintains the life of all these little living creatures as they go up or go down. And all the other scientific equipment. I mean, they have refrigeration equipment, freezers, whatever it takes. They'll send blood samples back. And I think it's like 4,000 pounds of stuff that comes back. And that'll land in the Pacific Ocean in January. So that's the mission for Dragon CRS-19. And then, of course, another Progress mission at the end of the week by Russia. They launch from Kazakhstan. Baikonur launch complex, and they'll bring up more, you know, another 5,000 to 6,000 pounds worth of stuff. I think SpaceX brings up around 7,000. So that's the deal with that. Let me drop it. And SpaceX has been pretty quiet, really, for the last couple of months. I think they have one launch in August. That was the last launch that we had. But now, as of course, December 4th, they're going to have the cargo vehicle go up. And then after that, on the 15th, which is only a week and a half later or so, they're going to have a Tokyo-based satellite go up called Sky Perfect. And that's going to be going to a geosynchronous orbit, and actually call it Pacific, with a K instead of a P, and that will be launched to a geosynchronous orbit, and again with a Falcon 9 rocket, and they'll have an autonomous drone ship out at sea, usually around 400 miles out, and they'll save the booster, bring it back, and reuse it. And the same for the Dragon crew vehicle. The one that's going up now has already been up like three times. It's going up for a fourth time, I think. So the vehicle that you see attached to the space station, it's all useful. And then you have another nice flight that I'm looking forward to. It's a test flight from Launch Complex 39A. And that will be a crew vehicle without a crew. And they want to test an inboard abort system, in-flight abort system. So they plan on launching from 39A. That's the same complex that they have, that they'll be launching crews from. You know, they have the swing arm that comes out with the white room, and you can bring people right out to the spacecraft. That's, you know, 230 feet high. So that's the launch complex it'll be launched from. It's going to be launching on a Falcon 9 booster. And it's only going to take about a minute and a half. It's going to get up to maximum Q over the Atlantic Ocean. And it's going to duplicate an emergency. It's going to duplicate, you know, an exploding booster. So at that point, at roughly a minute and a half, the trunk and the crew capsule will separate from the second stage booster. And, you know, it's got these massive, they call them Super Draco engines. Each little engine pushes around 40,000 pounds of thrust. There's a whole bunch of these things. And it comes out to around 160,000 pounds of thrust that will push the crew vehicle away from the second stage, along with the trunk that's the part of the spacecraft that normally has the unpressurized cargo that goes up to the space station. And eventually, right after that, it's got thrusters on board. It's going to turn it around. It's going to face the back end toward the Earth. That process, the trunk will separate. They don't need that anymore. And it will expose the heat shield. And that will be coming down in that direction with the heat shield first. And then the parachutes will open up. They have four parachutes, I think, on the crew vehicle. And hopefully that goes well and lands in the Atlantic Ocean. It'll be picked up by a SpaceX ship and it will be brought back for inspection. And if it all goes well, that means NASA will certify SpaceX to bring a crew up next time, and they'd be able to do that probably within as early as a couple of months. So that's good. I'm looking forward for that test. The Orion spacecraft, being built by NASA, did that test not too long ago. That was successful. Boeing Starliner does not have to do that test. All vehicles, all of them, have to do a pad test. They've all successfully done that. Boeing, SpaceX, and Orion have successfully launched from a pad, duplicating a booster failure, on a launch pad. And they blast it off and they go like a mile high and a mile out to sea, and they come back and land. They've all done that. Boeing is the only one that doesn't have to do an in-flight abort. That'll be, that's it. Before you know it, hopefully next year. I keep saying this, next year, we'll have a crew launch from Florida going to the International Space Station instead of using Russia. Any comments, questions? This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. Okay, nothing heard. Watched this flight 2 days ago from French Guiana. Kourou, French Guiana, is where the European Space Agency launches their rockets. And they launched another Ariane 5 rocket. The Ariane series that they launched has been going on now. They're in their 40th year, their 40th anniversary. It was actually Christmas Eve when they launched their first Ariane rocket in 1979. And now they're up to the 250th Ariane rocket. They had regular Aryans and then Aryan 3s, and then they never had an Aryan 4. They skipped that, and they went to an Aryan 5. But they're doing good. They launched two big satellites to the geosynchronous orbit, and that went very well. A couple of days ago, I got a chance to see that. You know, they actually have to bring it up on one of the other sites to see this. It doesn't come up on NASA. They have to search for it, you know, put an Aryan 5 in a rocket launch. And about 15 minutes before, they come on and they tell you all about the rocket, and they tell you all about the payload, and you get to see if they make it to space. It was delayed. It was supposed to go last Saturday, and then Sunday, Monday, they finally got off the ground. First they had a technical problem, a ground technical problem, then they had a weather problem. But, you know, it's amazing. It kind of reminds you of a shuttle. It's got this big, massive rocket in the middle, and that's filled with liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So it's the same fuel that the shuttle main engines used to burn. It has two solid booster rockets, large solid booster rockets. Not quite as big as the shuttle, but pretty big. So this thing is the European Space Agency's biggest rocket. They run three main rockets from French Guiana, three sizes. You know, you have small, medium, large, and Ariane 5 is the large one. And then there's a medium grade one, the Soyuz. They buy Soyuz rockets from Russia and they launch them from South America. And then the European Space Agency has the Vega rocket, completely built in Italy and shipped over to South America, and that's their light version. But they only have a couple more launches left. I think probably 2023, or they might retire it. And before that, one of the jobs that they have to do is to launch the James Webb Space Telescope. So that goes up on this particular rocket. So it's good to see that they're very successful with it. It tells NASA that we have a $2.5 billion thing that's going to Mars, and we're going to trust them with the launch. I was off with the price. I was thinking about the Mars launch. That's the Mars rover. James Webb Space Telescope is not $2.5 billion. It's roughly around $10 billion. So, Mars rover is going to be $2.5-3 billion. James Webb is around $10 billion. So we have a $10 billion space telescope going to be launched by the European Space Agency. So how about that? Any comments or questions? Was that Rich?
It is. Paul, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Rich. Very good. I hear you good. Go ahead. Okay, I did lose you on that. I heard one or two words, and that was it. You know, so maybe not. Do you want to try again? I'm moving my antenna around, trying to hear you on the input. Not copying you, Rich. Not usually you make it pretty good. I mean, I heard you. You know, you call letter. Said, am I copying you? Okay, I heard that. But after that, I just heard one or two words, and that was it. So maybe we'll try it again later or next week. Robert Zulu, you want to try it? Something about the space station's orbit. So, but that's all I heard. Well, all I can tell you is 250 miles up, and it's 51.6 degrees inclination. But I'm not sure what you're really asking me. So, sorry about that, Rich.
Let me try with the rig. Is this any better for me?
Yes, I heard every word.
Junkyard. Does the International Space Station orbit?
Okay, there were a couple of breaks there. I think you're asking how close to the space junkyard does the International Space Station orbit? Sounds like the question, but I might be wrong. Is that the question?
That is the question.
Okay, very good. All right. Thanks for being patient. Very good. Yeah, that's a long way off. The junkyard that they refer to is past 23,000 miles above the Earth, above the surface of the Earth. That's where the geosynchronous satellites are, in equatorial orbit, roughly, in the 0 to 1 degree inclination range, where the space station is only about 250 miles above the Earth. So, you're looking at a big difference. When you look down from the space station, they really have a hard time looking to see both horizons at the same time. They're relatively close to the Earth. But when you go out to 23,000 miles, you can easily see all the horizons. It's a big difference. As the satellites age, before they run out of fuel, they command them to go to the graveyard, and they push them out a little further into deeper space. They're still in orbit around the Earth, but they won't interfere anymore with existing satellites in orbit. So, yeah, we don't have a problem with that. There's plenty of satellites out there in the graveyard. We have around 8,000 operating satellites right now. There's probably about 20,000 and, beyond that point. Over the years, as they quit, that's where they wound up. Not sure how many geosynchronous satellites we have operating right now, but total, collectively, low Earth orbit all the way out, it's around 8,000. So that's the deal. So no problem there, Rich. Back to you, WS2.
I'm wondering if the astronauts can see off in the distance this belt of junk. The other question I have, a quick question, if you can hear me, hopefully, is do you know of any site that has recorded the sounds of satellites so you know if you're receiving one or not?
The sound of the satellite, what mechanisms working or moving? Is that what you mean?
Transmission. If I'm trying to receive a satellite signal, to be able to identify a satellite by the noise I'm hearing, whatever frequency.
The spy satellites and, for NRO, National Reconnaissance Orbiter, you'll never be able to copy that. That's all encrypted. And then I guess some weather satellites. I remember you used to be able to download the weather satellites and get it on your computer, pictures on your computer. Discovery had that capability too. It's not functioning right now. That's the one that's out a million miles from Earth, not 23,000 miles from Earth. So, some of them, but just, satellites are random. It's all encrypted. You want to be able to copy that. All your TV, TV stations that come down, all these different satellites, basically you're watching them if you subscribe to it. but they'll even tell you which one it's coming down from. That's about all I know about that. Back to you, Richard.
About the raw sound. I'm not talking about whether they encrypted, but when you're tuning around, let's say 1.525 gigahertz, and you hear a sound, how...
Oh, yeah, well, you're listening to the downlink, yeah, to see if it's anything that... No, not that I know of. Even if the carrier was coming down, you know, pick a number, you know, 24, you know, they have, you know, say 2 gig, and they have all the way up to, you know, 8 gig, you know, you have to actually hear something on a radio, you'd have to be able to know what the modulation is to be able to hear that. I wonder if you'd be able to see the CDS meter move, though. I really don't know. Back to you, Richard.
I have a DSR a DSR box, you know. Here, you know, like places, sometimes low pitch throughout the whole spectrum from low wave to the microwave. And I'm always wondering, is that a satellite, or is that some other kind of noise? I guess there's really no way of knowing. Thinking mostly about the satellites. How do I know I'm on one?
Well, of course, we have, I don't know how many Oscar satellites that are up there. But and there's only one... One Oscar satellite that's in geosynchronous orbit, and it's nowhere near us. It's out over Saudi Arabia, someplace over in that area, and it's attached to another satellite. They're using that. That's the first one that's actually made it to geosynchronous orbit, and all the other satellites you can get naturally from the ARRL. All the latest satellites, AMSAT, they would be able to let you know what those are, but commercial satellites, no, I have no idea. None whatsoever. I could guess if you hear a tone or some noise on a regular basis, I mean 24 hours a day, you could probably bet that thing is coming from directly overhead in geosynchronous orbit that's always there. You could probably prove that if you had a Yagi and you pointed, you know, to the away, you know, to the horizon, and then, you know, if it dropped off considerably or disappeared entirely, and then you went back up to the same location, and you know, you did that morning, noon, and night, you could bet that thing is in geosynchronous orbit back to you.
You say the junkyard of satellites is all—they're all in geo.
Yes, they're all in geosynchronous orbit. You know, there might be some Molinar satellites, mostly launched by the Russians. They always had problems with geosynchronous orbit. They managed to get things into geosynchronous orbit, but it's easier for them to launch three satellites. And they'll get one all the way up to, you know, 20,000 miles or even higher, and then it'll come back down low, you know, maybe 1,000 miles near the surface, and then go back out again, you know, and they'll be out in that distant location for 11 hours at a time, and as it comes back and it's near the Earth, the other satellite will be out in that area, and then as that comes back, the third one will be out there. So they have continuous communications through the Molinar orbit system. Russians have that. Most of their launch facilities are very far north, and it's not that easy for them to get into equatorial orbit. In fact, that's why we have the International Space Station at 51.6 degrees, because of their original launch platform was mirror, and that was the exact same inclination. So they might have some kind of a system. I don't know what they could possibly do. They have to have thrusters on there to circularize their orbit at an extreme inclination. I don't know what they would do when their satellites quit. Be ashamed to, you know, have these things just wandering around like that, you know, for the next 10,000 years. Any other questions?
Had their druthers, would they put their satellites all in geo orbit?
Not necessarily. They do like to get them, you know, in that mile an hour orbit, because they can cover the northern hemisphere real good. That's where most of Russia is, and that's where the North Pole is, and they have a lot of activity right now going on with all the ships that are going through. In fact, they built a nuclear-powered power station. It's a ship, a floating ship. It's in the Arctic Ocean. So they have a lot of weird things going on up there. They want to know. The military wants to know what's going on. So they're very happy with those orbits. They don't need the geosynchronous as much as the rest of the world. Okay, with that, I really don't have all that much more. It's been a quiet time for space launches, but plenty of things going on. There's a lot of upcoming things I try to talk about, but then I find out that they don't build in the future. You know, like the Russians were supposed to have a reusable rocket that was going to replace the Soyuz, you know, called the Clipper. It was spelled with, not with a C, but with a K, you know, and that thing was supposed to be built many years ago. They started working on that in the turn of the millennium, and I would read about these things. That would never come to pass. We had the Constellation project here in the States. We thought we were going to be back to the moon in no time, and they canceled the whole Constellation project, so... try to stick with the things that are going to make it, although you never know which ones are going to make it. Any comments or questions? Okay, well, I'll be back next week. Let me see if Dick wants to take it, see what he wants to do, if we'll continue on or end early. K2RIW, this is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
Well, my understanding, let's see now, I'm getting some fish in the background there. My understanding of the graveyard for synchronous satellites is slightly higher than the synchronous altitude, because everything above synchronous altitude slowly spirals outward. Everything inside the synchronous altitude slowly spirals inward. So by putting your expended satellites up higher, you use your last little bit of fuel to blast them into a slightly higher orbit. They're out of the way, no longer a hazard for the new synchronous satellite you're sending up. Does that sound reasonable, Paul? K2RIW?
That's exactly right. That's what I tried to explain to Rich, where that thing was. Yeah, they're all above the geosynchronous location, and they'll never come back.
Now, if you want to know if the astronauts on the International Space Station can see that junk, I think the answer is no, because synchronous altitude is 22,000 miles up, and they're only a couple of hundred miles up. So all of those other satellites are tens of thousands of miles away from them. They don't stand a chance to see them, not even with a darn good telescope. Over you, Paul.
Oh, yeah. We're happy to see the space station go all overhead on one of these tests that I talked about. You know, the best we ever get is like a minus 3.5 magnitude, which is, you know, pretty bright. I mean, it's almost bright as Venus, not quite. it's pretty bright. But to, you know, to get that magnitude, if it was, imagine if it was 23,000 miles up, I don't think, you know, they'd have as much chance of seeing that as we would. All right, they don't have the atmosphere in a way, but, you know, I would say that there's not much of a difference between those guys on the space station looking up or what we could do here on Earth. You know, the proportion, the difference between the two, you know, we might as well be in orbit.
Now, here's another crazy one. If the International Space Station was going to pass directly overhead for you, and you first pick it up as it comes over your western horizon, eventually comes straight overhead, and then disappears over the eastern horizon from where you are, that whole path is around 18 minutes, horizon to horizon. So now let's assume that you've chosen one of the... So you're able to look directly at the sun without burning your eyes. And now, when the International Space Station is going to cross in front of the sun, you're going to take a picture with your telescope, and therefore you'll see a silhouette of the International Space Station against the sun. So far you got that picture? Paul, go ahead.
I've seen that picture, actually. Yeah. They printed that picture. Other people have done that.
Now, assuming you're in exactly the right spot, so that the International Space Station is really going to come between you and the sun, how difficult do you think it is to get that picture?
I'm not very good at photography. I got lucky with the rocket not too long ago, but no, that would be very difficult. You know, you're looking at the sun. First of all, you need all kinds of filters. Maybe you could do what you do when they looked at Mercury. Maybe you could have a screen, a box reflected onto that. People were able to, my brother did it, he was able to actually see Mercury crossing the sun. So, yeah, you might have a shot with that.
Yeah, Mercury crosses the sun in some number of hours. I think it takes 3 or 4 hours for Mercury to cross across the sun. So here you've got the International Space Station crossing across the sun. And when within your solar-filtered telescope, you see International Space Station somewhere in the middle of the sun, you click the shutter. Sounds good. At 17,500 miles an hour, that's how fast the International Space Station is moving. And it's a couple hundred miles up. And you go through the geometry of all that, you'll find out the International Space Station drifts across the sun in roughly a third of a second from edge to edge. You think you're going to wait until you see the International Space Station in front of the sun and then click the camera. It takes a good three-quarters of a second for human reaction time. You don't stand a chance. What you've got to do is know exactly when the timing is supposed to be and run a motion picture camera, 16 frames per second, and hope one or two of those frames catch it. It's a very fast event. The sun's only half a degree wide, and the International Space Station moves a half a degree in about a third of a second. Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Oh, yeah, it really does. I mean, it was last night when I saw it. I'm watching it for 4 minutes. You know, and you're saying 18 minutes. I think that's radio time, Dick. Visual, I've never seen it longer than 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes tops.
You're right. Absolute horizon to horizon radio time. Optically, you can only see something some number of degrees above the horizon. So when you boil that down, I guess you're saying it turns out to be more like 6 minutes. So it goes across your visual horizon in 6 minutes, and that's... almost 180 degrees of sweep, and you calculate that in degrees per minute, and how long is it going to be within half a degree of the sun? The answer is very brief. So that you've got to do it as an automatic, a whole lot of frames per second, and hope one or two of those frames are the good ones, because you can't do it with normal human reaction time. Over to you, Paul.
That's true. I'm going to go look for it again on Wednesday, and imagine where the moon is. The moon's going to be behind me. moon's on in the south. But this is going to be from the north, the northwest to the northeast. And it's only going to be about 14 degrees above the horizon at 1.4 magnitude, which is pretty good. It's not bad. And that's going to start at 5:04. And again, it's about 4 minutes. If it's low on the horizon, you see the space station roughly 4 minutes. If it goes directly above you, you can get 6.5 minutes.
Now, when you were looking at the space station, were you using binoculars, telescope, or just the naked eye? My guess is the naked eye looking at the International Space Station, you just see a white dot drifting across the sky. Isn't that true?
Yes, but it's hard to follow with binoculars. I'd like to try it. One of these days I'll try it. I'm going to try it when it goes overhead, because I imagine, even with eyes, you know, naked eyes, I could see the panel, you know. It's hard to, you know, you don't know if it's your brain tricking you, but I think I saw it one time about a year ago.
So, just naked eye said you believed you saw the panels. And so, I think you're saying it's going to be a little bit hard to find with binoculars because of aiming the binoculars in the right position to find it. You have or haven't tried with binoculars? Go ahead.
I'm going to try it. I have a pretty good binocular, so we'll try it. Not this Wednesday. I want to make sure it's a brighter magnitude. 1.4 is not going to do it. I need a minus 2.5 or minus 3 to do it. And, you know, there was somebody else with me, you know, somebody young, and their eyes confirmed that they saw a panel, so... You know, I'm trusting their eyes more than mine. Back to you, Dick.
Okay. So I think you're through for the night. I guess we'll say 73. Bye-bye, you all. Turn it back to Roy if he wants to give his addresses one more time. I just looked at the Veritasium three puzzles of the ring on the chain and the pressure inside of a soda bottle with the pressure gauge in the top and so on. Good stuff. Good old, I can't think of his name right now. You know who I mean. Over to you, Roy. ACTGS, KQRIW.
Yes, indeed. Dr. Mueller, I don't know if he has a doctorate. He probably does. It's a very good bunch of videos. If anyone has free time and wants to wander through YouTube, you can't go wrong by going through his pages and picking out topics. They're always interesting. So thanks for turning it over for a second to me, Dick. As always, I want to remind everyone that if you have any mailbag questions for Dick and can't get on the text net with your radio, or if you have any space report comments, either to tell Paul about something that you saw or ask Paul a question, if you'd like to ask me a question, suggest a topic or suggest a puzzler, the email address, as always, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And once again, all the links to all the stories that I mentioned are available, and including the Veritasium link. That can be found by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll get you there. So, until next week, guys, have a great week, and I wish you all well, and we'll see you back here next week to do it all over again. This is AC2GS, and I'll be going clear.
Bye-bye, Roy. Bye-bye, Paul. K2RIW clear. Be kind to each other, you guys.
Club and phone net, 8:30. This is repeater. Anybody wants to join it? You don't have to be a member to... check into that net. Have a good night. We'll be back next week. Go Limock. Go Technic.
That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. Thank you. net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m. This is the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
B for WB2CSE.
Mobile.
ZUC Mobile, you're listening.
Look!
Yeah, to ZUC, WB2ZUC. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. Kind of damp and drizzly out here, but otherwise. It's that time of year. How you making out?
Strangely, very well. I guess, everybody got delayed coming back at least today. Excuse me.
Yeah, people had to travel by air and so on. They had to tough with the connections and delays and cancellations and so on. Back to work, right?
I guess not. I mean, I'm heading into the city and I'm at the Clearview, which is normally quite heavy, and I'm doing about 50.
Is that better than usual?
So far, and it looks like I spoke too soon.
That's what usually happens. I'm on my way to the gym. Later on, it's going to be lousy if you're coming back in the PM rush.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll see what happens. I may wind up out in Nassau, which reminds me, I should make a telephone call about that.
Okay. Rain's supposed to change the snow.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be that bad, but I'm sure it'll be messy enough so that people will have problems.
As usual.
Yeah. Well, it's good when it starts out in the morning. Everybody looks out the window and goes, I'm not going into work.
It's not bad if they had that option. I know when I was working, I'd look out that window and say, oh, I have to go in and trudge through snow and get stuck here and so on and ice and whatnot. But then when I retired, I felt like I was trapped if I couldn't get out. So you can't be happy, I guess, either way or the other.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I tend to go a little bananas if I can't get out of the house.
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to go, but you want to be able to go.
That's really true. Even if it's to go shopping or go someplace, then come back. At least you know you can get out.
Yeah. Hang on. What? Okay, I just wanted to get over to the right because I wanted to see if I wanted to exit here or the next exit. And I think the next exit's the one in order. That reminds me, I wonder where Andy is. Thought he'd be back by now.
Did he go on a trip?
Yeah, he's just doing something around the house. Told him I'd jump on here, and I haven't heard him yet.
You're looking for me? WACDO.
Here he is. Pick it up and give it to Steve.
No, I'm printing stuff out from the computer, but it's so slow. My laptop is so slow, it's crazy. It just takes a long time, and if there's a drawing I gotta print out, it doesn't it takes a long time for it to load in, to buffer it, and to do all that stuff through the laptop. That's what's taking so long.
You know what you need? You need more RAM.
No, you hear that Intermod? You just hear that Intermod? You're right there. Gotta figure out where that's coming from. You hear it?
Yeah, unfortunately, it sounds like adjacent channel, so it may not be winding up directly on frequency.
If I keep it deep, maybe I can identify it, because I hear somebody's talking, but it's not adjacent channel. I don't think so. I don't hear anything. It was adjacent way.
I'm saying the Intermod may be winding up like 8 or 9 KCOR frequency. You know, so it's enough to get open the squelch, but not enough to hear if you were listening, you know, from where you are.
Interesting. Hold on a second. Pick it up at the other station.
I'm still here, Ed. Is that you say? Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. This will give Andy something to look for. It just sounds like it's whatever it is off frequency. You know, so I don't know. One never knows. Anyway, I am headed in towards the city. Actually, it's not too terrible even now. It's considerably better than normal.
Some people may have the week off, take vacation. All right, I'll sign with you. Not far from the gym. Stay dry. Speak to you next time. And to that, Juicy. Back to you and listening out.
Okay, see you later. WB2ZSC.
All right, WA2CDO, 73-1. Hold on a second, Steve. I want to... See, now it's gone. I didn't want it. Hold on.
Okay, tell me where they can let go.
No, I was wondering if it's coming down the link also. So that's what I got to... I wanted to check that, but I don't hear it now. At least here I don't hear it. I'm on low power. That's why... If I hear something there a little bit. If I can hear it again, if I can get that, what I just heard, I'm going to listen on the link.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's the link because the courtesy tone would have been different.
All right, but hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4. Alright, test 1, 2, 3, 4. See, I do hear a little bit. Here. Okay.
Yeah, besides that, the link is transmitting while we're transmitting on the input to the repeater, so it's not receiving.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's right. So, yeah, it's not
that,
yes. I agree.
Okay.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Okay, now I'm coming. Yeah, now I hear it. Now I'm coming in on the link. That's me on the link. Now you're not going to hear that time. The audio is different a little bit. You're not going to hear it here. But you're going to hear it here. All right, back to you.
Okay. Well, I'll let you continue printing out things. I assume Richie is getting his cup of coffee. And with any kind of luck, I'll be in the office in 15, 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just printing out all these different pages and stuff. Okay.
Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Here is WP2EAV Mobile listening.
Happy Thanksgiving, Ed. WA2CDL sending.
How are you? I am very good, Angie, and thank you for your kind wishes. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. And how are you? It's rather soggy day.
Okay, just doing some computer work, so I figured I'd say hello since you're on. Well, so far, no. I don't want to say the word S word. Hopefully it stays that way, but they say it's going to be doing it later.
Yes, we are supposed to have some snow later, but nothing serious, just like 1 inch of a wet, slushy mess. You're man enough to handle that, Andy.
Yeah, I hope so. I should be able to. So, all right. I think I have one more leaf raking to do. Cause now the leaves are down, just about. So now I can work on the backyard, but not today, it's too wet. When it dries up, then I'm gonna get rid of the rest of the leaves, and then I could leave. Get it? Leave?
Oh, I get it, all right, but I'm not sure where you're going to go when you leave.
I don't know either. It just sounds funny. All right. Yeah, so Thanksgiving was good. Had a good time. And, what else could I tell you? Everything else is quiet.
Yeah, I had a very nice Thanksgiving. My son came in from D.C., and I spent some time with both of the kids and my granddaughter, and we visited some family out in Jersey, and it worked out very well. Did I ever tell you my secret to traveling over the George Washington Bridge on Thanksgiving Day?
No, but I know you're going to tell me, so I might as well ask. What did you do to the George Washington Bridge?
Didn't do anything to it. No, it's just that we leave the house at 10 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day, and you pretty much blow right through. And then we find a place, you know, we have a place in mind. We stop for a really nice brunch and stuff like that. I find it so much better than sitting in traffic.
Oh, I somehow don't understand what you're saying. So instead of going where you want to go, you just sat at a place to eat and stayed there?
Well, what we do is we get up, have a very light bite to eat,